We're going to talk about the Republican health care bill that passed in the House yesterday. We'll talk about President Trump's religious freedom executive order. There's another free speech bill that was introduced in the state legislature, and much more during this edition of The Week in Review. But before we welcome our two guests from different perspectives, let me welcome Kate Archer Kent. It's good to have you here again, Kate. This is the last day of Wisconsin Public Radio's spring membership drive, and your gift of any amount makes a big difference.
Your support keeps this program, The Joy Cardine Show, and all the other WPR programs you count on the air. So give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, last hour we did make our goal and then some. Thank
yes.
you so much for your pledges. Right now, we have a hefty goal, 60 pledges, and though we have some incentive, we have a dollar-for-dollar match on this last hour of the Joy Cardine Show on the last day of the spring membership drive. Up to $6,500. This generous match is from current members. It means they will match every dollar you give.
Yeah, and that's so fabulous. Current members encouraging new members into the fold, and members, you know, who are renewing, members who can't remember the last time they pledged, every dollar is matched right now, up to $6,500. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Double your support for the programs you love. Give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars. We do get funding from the federal government and from the state, but listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income.
And consider that your support is vital to keep Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know how important listener support is, make a pledge. It will be doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Whether you tune in for one specific favorite program, like The Week in Review, or if you find yourself checking in to different programs throughout the day, throughout the week, you are getting value from what you hear. If you've never given before, you can start off with a pledge of, say, $5 a month or whatever you choose at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And when you do, you will feel great.
2017 marks WPR's first 100 years, and you can honor the occasion by planting a centennial forest in Wisconsin. Today is your chance to do two good things at once when you give to Wisconsin Public Radio. Let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio. Donate $5 a month to WPR and choose to plant a tree as your thank you gift. We're partnering with Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison, and they'll match every tree we plant. Celebrate with us. Make a pledge. Help build a forest. It all starts with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kate Archer Kent, asking for your support of WPR, your gift of $10 a month or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, your gift is needed and appreciated.
And we all know time flies, and maybe it's been longer than you realize since you last gave to WPR. We're asking you to be radioactive, to keep your membership active.
Radioactive. Think of your support of WPR like you think of other services that you rely on and that you pay for, like the internet or like your phone. Renew your support of WPR right now with an ongoing monthly gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And the important thing to bear in mind, our dollar-for-dollar match from current members is in effect right now. Give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR will go twice as far on this final day, final hours of our spring membership drive.
Thanks very much for your support. We'll talk to you later, Kate. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. We are going to be talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state and national politics. We will start with the Republican health care bill that passed in the House of Representatives yesterday. What do you think of it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Do you think that the so-called Trump care is better than the so-called Obamacare? Let's welcome our guests. Michelle Litchens is with us, a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Matt Rothschild is here, executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Good morning, Matt.
Hi, Joy. Nice to see you. Nice to hear you, Michelle.
Yeah, and now I have your mic on, so we all heard you. So it took some wheeling and dealing. House Republicans passed a bill yesterday to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. They needed 216 votes. They got 217 votes. All five of Wisconsin's Republicans in the congressional delegation voted for the measure. All three Democrats voted against it. Afterward, Republicans went to the White House to celebrate their victory with President Trump.
We suffered with Obamacare. I went through 2 years of campaigning, and I'm telling you, no matter where I went, people were suffering so badly with the ravages of Obamacare. And I will say this, that as far as I'm concerned, your premiums, they're going to start to come down. We're going to get this passed through the Senate. I feel so confident.
So let's start with you, Michelle. Are you feeling good about this bill? And do you think premiums will go down and the Senate will pass it?
I am feeling good about this bill. I'm not sure if the Senate is going to pass it in the exact form that it is at right now, but at least they're going to take up the discussion, and we are going to see some reprieve from the Affordable Care Act, from Obamacare. I think it's interesting when we look back to when Obamacare was first passed. It was only passed with 219 votes, so that's not too much different than this with 217 votes. They had 34 Democrats actually vote against it at the time. No Republicans voted in favor of Obamacare at the time. And we heard President Obama tell us we can keep our doctor, which many of us have not been able to do so. He told us our premiums were going to go down by $2,500 a year, and that hasn't happened. For everyone listening, including myself, who pays for our own health insurance, our health insurance premiums have, if not doubled, they've tripled over the last few years. And if we look back, Obamacare was the reason for the Republican Revolution in 2010 that took over so many state legislatures and gave Republicans the majority in Congress. So Americans did want to see a change. They did want to make sure that pre-existing conditions were going to that people who had pre-existing conditions, that they would still have the opportunity to have health insurance. And I'm glad that we had congressmen fight to make sure that that was going to continue to happen. So I'm glad to see this happen. It needed to happen. Republicans needed to show that they could get something done. And I believe this is going to continue to move forward in the Senate.
All right. Well, Matt, what do you think of this GOP bill?
It's a disaster, and if Donald Trump thinks people were suffering before, they're really going to suffer now. And Michelle says that pre-existing conditions are going to be covered. That's not a guarantee. States can apply for a waiver under this new bill, which would allow insurance companies in those states to raise the rates on people with pre-existing conditions through the roof so they wouldn't be able to afford it. And so we're going to have people with terrible pre-existing conditions who aren't going to be able to get the care they need. I mean, that is about as callous as you can be, and that's a huge problem with this bill. Another problem on the callous level is that people who are covered in states that got Medicaid expansion, even though our governor refused it, those people are no longer going to be able to be covered. About 24 million people are supposed to lose their health insurance over the next decade, according to the Congressional Budget Office estimate on the original bill, and this new bill doesn't change the criteria there. So I just think it's all going to fall apart. And the problem with the Affordable Care Act was that it wasn't universal care. It wasn't Medicare for all. And I suppose once this thing collapses under its own weight, we may get to Medicare for all, but it's going to cause a great deal of human suffering between now and then. And that's why I think it's a disaster.
Yeah. Well, address that, Michelle. In terms of the pre-existing conditions, we don't really know how much that coverage would cost or if it will actually be provided to all.
But there's two parts of the pre-existing condition. This bill did say if you currently have insurance and you come down with something catastrophic, that your insurance premiums cannot be raised. So if you currently have insurance, you are not going to lose insurance, whether you come down with cancer or something else that's very extreme and costs millions of dollars to treat. But remember what Wisconsin had before Obamacare. We had HRSP, the high-risk insurance sharing pool. 95% of individuals were covered with health insurance in the state of Wisconsin before the Affordable Care Act because we made sure that those individuals had access to health insurance. Now, many of those people said they were paying $1,000 a month in premiums, and I believe we could subsidize that more. I don't have any problems with that. But the states are the people who should be taking care of health care for their people, not the federal government. That's not the way our country was designed. Now, again, for those individuals who want universal health care and you want to be more like the socialized countries in Europe, they're not going to be happy with this at all because we are definitely going back to a consumer-driven a formula. But another thing that Matt brought up, 24 million people were going to lose coverage. Those people were not losing coverage. Those people will now have the option to purchase health insurance. That number was referring to young people who often don't choose to purchase health insurance because they're young and they're healthy and they don't want to pay a large premium and then have a huge deductible that they're not going to be taking advantage of. So, again, you're right. These individuals will still be allowed the opportunity to choose to buy health insurance, and they won't have to buy it if they don't feel they need it.
Well, can I just respond, Joy? Mm-hmm. Because Michelle said, if you currently have insurance and you have a pre-existing condition, you'll still be able to get insurance. But if you don't currently have insurance, you may not be able to get coverage, even if you have a pre-existing condition. That's the problem. What if you're laid off and you lose your insurance that was coming through your employer and you come down with some terrible disease you can't pay the exorbitant premiums then that insurance companies might be allowed to pay in your state? And the idea that states should take care of people, and this is on the idea that health care is not a human right, that states should decide whether, wow, if you got pre-existing conditions, you can be covered, or guess what? We're tough in our state. We're going to make you go out there and choose to, you know, give up your home and every drop of savings you have just so you can partially insure yourself or your poor kid who has some horrible disease. I mean, I don't think that's the country you want to live in. I think we need to get to a place in a hurry where we understand, like every other advanced industrial society, that healthcare is a human right.
Let's take a listen to what Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi had to say in her speech on the House floor just before the vote. She predicted moderate Republicans were going to pay a steep price for going along with this plan.
You vote for this bill, you have walked the plank from moderate to radical. And you're walking the plank for what? A bill that will not be accepted by the United States Senate. Why are you doing this? Do you believe in what is in this bill? Some of you have said, well, they'll fix it in the Senate. But you have every provision of this bill tattooed on your forehead. You will glow in the dark on this one.
And let me go right to Dave in Madison, who's got a comment that's related. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi. I saw a clip today. It was in 2009, after the Affordable Care Act passed in the House, Representative Ryan made a prediction that Democrats would rue the day that they voted for a bill that they didn't read and that the Congressional Budget Office had not scored. And he was absolutely right. They got hammered in the election. Well, the Republicans voted for a bill that they did not read and the Congressional Budget Office had not scored. And when they find out that millions will be thrown off the rolls, I think they will suffer the same fate. What do you think?
Michelle?
I disagree. They have passed so many copies of this bill over the last 7 years in Congress. They have read what they voted on this time. It was not scored, but they did have actuaries look at this bill and tell them the value and what it was going to cost. So they did have numbers going into this, unlike Nancy Pelosi when she said that you have to pass the Affordable Care Act to know what's in it. The individuals who voted for this knew what they were voting for.
Matt?
Well, I saw accounts from legislators who said they frankly didn't know what they were voting for. But to me, the political gaming on this isn't what's so important. And I don't have the confidence that Nancy Pelosi has and some of the Democrats have that Republicans are going to pay the price at the polls next time. You know, I'm reminded of the 96% people sticking with Trump who voted for him the first time. And the Affordable Care Act was so propagandized for so many years, and Obamacare was attached to it, and the president made a mistake by adhering to that label or saying he liked that label. And it was never about President Obama. It was about giving people the care they needed. And of course, he sold progressive short. President Obama did when he didn't offer a public option or Medicare for all. I'm not sure that in this climate today, with all the propagandizing that's gone on, and with Donald Trump delivering at least something for his base, that people on his side are going to rebel, or that independents and moderates are going to take their revenge on the incumbent Republicans. I'm just not sure about that.
Randy in Kewaskum is with us. Hi, Randy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I guess the biggest part of the problem is the current health care bill, the Unaffordable Care Act, has been mischaracterized as helping people out. A majority of us out here have had our insurance premiums triple, and that isn't even for the same policy. I'm sorry, when my insurance went from a $2,500 deductible to a $7,800 deductible, that isn't even the same insurance. And right now, a third of the counties in the United States have only one provider available, and from the sounds of it, by next year, Iowa will have no insurance companies available for people that are looking for insurance. So to say that this is working is ridiculous. And I guess...
All right, let me just, because of our time, so it's not working, Matt, Obamacare is not working, the premiums are not affordable, and there are no insurance companies, or insurance companies are dropping out, so we got to do something.
Well, the Affordable Care Act had its limits, and because it wasn't Medicare for all, and it didn't put a ceiling on the rates that insurance companies could raise premiums and deductibles on, that was a mistake at birth. And so it was troubling for people, to say the least, when their rates would go up so far. So I sympathize with Randy. But the best part, the humane part of the Affordable Care Act, was covering people with pre-existing conditions, covering people near the poverty line under Medicaid. And both of those things are going to be gone under this Trump care. And deductions are still going to be super high, and more people are going to be thrown off. Our health care system is going to be absurd, because people without health care then are going to go to health insurance, are going to go to the emergency room after their conditions flare up, when it would have been cheaper to have them get regular coverage and preventive care. And the system is going to go bust this way. It's just going to go bust in a different way than it did under the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. We got to kind of wrap this up. Michelle, your thoughts?
Yeah.
I think you agree with Randy. But,
I would agree with Randy. And I think that's exactly why Trump won the election this last fall. So many Americans saw their premiums and their deductibles skyrocket, and it is now unaffordable health insurance. And when you can't use it, you don't think you have health insurance at all. So this is going to bring some reprieve, because it's going to bring the market back into place. But people will vote their pocketbooks in 2 years. If their premiums start going down, they will continue to support their congressman that voted in favor of this, and they'll reelect President Trump in 4 years.
Michelle Lichens is a former Republican state representative. Matt Rothschild is the executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, our two guests for this edition of The Week in Review. When we come back, we'll talk about some other issues. President Trump signed an executive order yesterday to allow religious groups greater freedom in political speech. We will talk about that, and some freedom of speech bills affecting the University of Wisconsin as well. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. We'll get back to our discussion of the top political issues in the news this week in just a moment. But first, Kate Archer-Kent joins me because your contribution right now keeps the Joy Cardine Show going strong. $5, $10, $20 a month, every gift in any amount makes a big difference. So donate now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And the really exciting thing, Joy, is that we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now. The lion's share of that match is up for grabs. And that dollar-for-dollar match, by the way, is made possible from current members of WPR. So your gift of $50 will turn into $100. $100 turns into $200. And you get the picture. Take advantage of this match right now. Double your support for WPR programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As we celebrate our centennial year, we'd like to say thank you to our listeners. You are such a big part of what brought WPR this far. You help create engaging programming that people rely on every day. Thank you for having such a big impact on our first 100 years.
Mm-hmm. And we have a bright future ahead of us. And while it's impossible to predict what the next 100 years will bring, what it will look like, one thing is for sure. One thing's a given. It's only possible with your support. When we do this together, your gift helps today and it helps build a strong tomorrow and looking forward to the next 100 years. So give right now. Your gift will be matched dollar for dollar at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Whether you're already a member or you're making your very first pledge ever, anyone can become a sustainer. Let us know what monthly amount works for you and whether you want it to come out of your bank account or your credit card.
It's that easy. And once it's set up, your membership automatically renews. And so you don't have to wonder and scratch your head if it's your time to pledge or not when you hear a pledge drive. Start your sustaining membership right now. Spread it out at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I like Wisconsin Public Radio because the programming is excellent. I feel like being a listener and a contributor that it helps me be a little more in control of what's over the airwaves. Wisconsin Public Radio is important because all of us as a community are contributing and helping to make sure that we get balanced coverage on news and also a very positive listening environment. I find humor and I love the political discussion that covers both sides of the issues, and I think that's really important. I'm Amy Kocha from Green Bay, and I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you, Amy, for that. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Once again, our dollar-for-dollar match still in effect. Make that contribution right now to support WPR. It'll go twice as far on this final day of our spring membership drive.
Thank you to Sarah from Milwaukee, who says, happy birthday to WPR. What a special treat on an already special program. Joy's shows keep me productive, informed, and are a good companion on my long ride to work every day. Well, I'm happy to keep you company. Sarah, thank you so much for your pledge. This is the last day of the spring membership drive, your only opportunity during this spring membership drive to make a contribution during the Week in Review if this is one of your regular programs. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with Matt Rothschild, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and Michelle Litchens, a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. We are talking with them about top stories in the news this week. We're welcoming your views and any topics you would like to introduce at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. So President Trump signed an executive order yesterday to allow religious groups greater freedom in political speech. It would relax the IRS enforcement of the Johnson Amendment, which bans tax-exempt organizations like churches from political speech and activities. It is also supposed to give regulatory relief to companies that object to a mandate, for example, for contraception in healthcare. Let's stick to this freedom of political speech by nonprofits, including churches. Matt, any problems with this?
Yeah, I've got a lot of problems with it, even though I'm working for a nonprofit now. I've worked for nonprofits for 40 years. The problem is that we are establishing churches and other nonprofits now as functionally dark money groups. So that, you know, it's bad enough that the super rich can spend unlimited amounts of money to pay for these bogus issue ads that splatter our screens with mud during election season. We won't know who's paying for the mud. But now they'll get a tax deduction for doing so. And that seems ridiculous. So I think it's a real problem. Dark money is a huge problem right now for our democracy, and it's going to get even worse.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts, Michelle?
I would not agree with the dark money aspect of it. I'm glad that the president is starting to address this. You should feel free as a pastor, as a rabbi, to be able to talk to your congregation about who they should vote for. I do believe they should have the opportunity and the freedom to do that. I'm a little disappointed, though, that the president is going about doing this through an executive order. I mean, that is very Obama-esque. I mean, he did more executive orders than any other president in history. But he really should be attacking this legislatively and asking Congress to come up with some changes to the Johnson rule. That would be the right way to go about doing this. I am glad that there's going to be some regulatory relief. If you are a Catholic school, and you don't believe in paying for contraception through your health care, your health insurance, I don't believe you should have to pay for that. That goes against their faith and what they're teaching their students with Catholic churches or whatever, whomever it might be affecting out there. So I am glad that the...
Oops, that doesn't sound good. We'll have to see if we lost Michelle. We're going to call her back. Meantime... As we call her back, we are going to move on to some state political news. State Republicans unveiled competing bills this week aimed at protecting free speech on college campuses. The first one, from Representative Jesse Kramer, would require the UW system to adopt a policy on freedom of expression and to discipline or sanction students who violate it. He says he's trying to get at those who disrupt the speeches of others and try to shout down speakers and not allow the freedom of speech of others by doing so. The second bill is from Senator Leah Vukmir. It would cover UW schools and technical colleges and would allow each institution to decide for itself how to discipline students who would violate the free speech rights of others. So I know, Matt, you are a big freedom of speech guy. In fact, I think, weren't you arrested for a freedom of speech in the state capitol? I'm trying to remember.
I was arrested for holding a sign in the state assembly gallery when they were arresting people for holding signs or taking pictures. Actually, I was arrested for taking a picture of someone being arrested for...
That's right. That's right. That was the sign thing. I remember that, but that it was related. And so anyway, what do you think about these attempts to presumably address the problem of or the issue of students who will sometimes protest and try to shout down, boo, stop speakers from coming even, who they don't agree with. And now state lawmakers say that shouldn't happen.
Well, I think these bills are unconstitutionally vague and broad. I think no one should be prohibited from speaking. By the same token, I think if you boo or hiss or laugh occasionally while someone is speaking or express disapproval, that isn't grounds for dismissal. Under the Kramer bill, you'd be thrown out if you booed twice. And I think that's ridiculous. Look at the language in his bill. Anyone who engages in violent, abusive, indecent, profane, boisterous, obscene, unreasonably loud, or other disorderly conduct that interferes with the free expression of others could be sanctioned. What does boisterous? Boy, what if you clap real loud? You know, you're being boisterous. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And then there's another aspect of both bills that I found really objectionable, and that is they would limit what UW institutions could say themselves as an institution, that UW institutions must remain neutral on public policy controversies. What does that really mean? I mean, the University of Wisconsin has been a leader in stem cell research. Is the University of Wisconsin supposed to be mute on the question as to whether stem cell research is going to save people's lives? Or what if you're working at the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies, or you're the university that supports it? Are you supposed to be mute on the question as to whether climate change is man-made and causing severe problems for the Earth? You know, we're supposed to be able to sift and winnow here at the UW, and I find these bills would rather make us have a gag in our mouth.
All right. Michelle, do you think these bills are needed?
I do think they're needed. And I also think it's so unfortunate that we are at the point in our society when colleges and universities used to be the place where you could come and speak with any idea. It could be the craziest idea. You could be talking about how you still believe the world is flat, and you should be able to discuss that openly without people hissing, booing, screaming, yelling obscenities at you, and you should feel safe to share your ideas, no matter how crazy or different they might be. And that is what a university and a college is all about, being able to openly discuss these ideas. And so I support these bills, and it's just unfortunate they even need to be brought up at the legislative levels, because you would hope that universities and colleges would be talking to their students by saying, you know, it is wrong for you to not want to hear someone with an opposite point of view. I mean, that's how we all grow as people, which is why I support Wisconsin Public Radio, because I want to hear the opposite point of view from what mine is often on the radio. So I'm glad that you afford me that opportunity to hear other people's opinions. But I don't think that it's right that conservative speakers should be so intimidated via threats of violence, because we've seen what happens or what has happened at universities across the country where people actually have been physically harmed. Charles Murray, for instance, you know, in Vermont, thank goodness that didn't happen in Madison the other day. But I think we do need to do something at the legislative level if our universities are not going to do something to curb these threats of violence to conservatives coming to speak at their campuses.
What about, Michelle, this language that says the University of Wisconsin should remain neutral on public policy issues?
Well, I think, unfortunately, that is relating more to those professors that are encouraging their students and giving them extra credit points when they go out and protest, because that's not right. Now, you want your professors to have an opinion, but I think you also want your professors to give you both sides of that opinion. And I don't think if someone gave both sides of an opinion that they would be, that they would be sanctioned for any reason. But I think it's those individuals that are encouraging their students only to participate in one side. Now, again, when Matt was talking about stem cell research, that's controversial, but I think they have every right to be discussing something like that at the university level. But we should not have professors encouraging students only to participate in one side of a political issue.
Yeah. When we talked with State Representative Jesse Kramer earlier this week, he did say that he thought that the language in his own bill was too broad, and that he was going to narrow that. But he also said that this is not aimed at, if somebody wants to be, you know, on a street corner saying whatever, or even with protest signs outside the building that somebody might be speaking at, you know, all that is permissible, but being inside the actual auditorium and booing and shouting down and disrupting and trying to stop that person from speaking, that's when you would face a violation of this, Matt.
Well, I did hear him say that. I was driving down to Milwaukee and listening to your show, and I was shocked. You said, you know, critics say this is unconstitutional. How do you respond? He said, I agree, and he wrote the bill. So, you know, it's Kramer versus Kramer. You know, it's just very weird. Look, there's a big difference between booing or hissing when someone says something that you disagree with, and and essentially exercising a heckler's veto and not being allowed the person to talk. The person up there has a microphone. Most of those people are going to be able to talk over whoever's expressing disapproval. So I'm all for, you know, the give and take there. And it's not just, well, let's be clear, this is happening all over the ideological spectrum. In Arkansas, there's a bill to prohibit Howard Zinn from being taught in the schools in Arkansas. Ward Churchill in Colorado after 9/11 was essentially kicked off the university roll. Immigrant rights literature in Arizona was prohibited from being taught for a while by right-wingers. You know, you can have intolerance in every stripe.
Yeah. On a related matter, let me bring up this other story. A Washington jury convicted three people of being disruptive at the confirmation hearing for U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. After a senator said Sessions has a record of treating all Americans equally under the law, one of the three let out, I guess, a loud burst of laughter. The police tried to told the woman she needed to leave. She wouldn't. She became she didn't want to leave. She became somewhat disruptive, apparently. She was removed from the confirmation process and then was convicted of disorderly conduct. A lot of people are looking at this, and I'm going to start with Matt on this one, saying, boy, you get arrested and convicted for laughing. What is your response to this conviction?
Yeah, you know, again, I think there needs to be some proportionality here. This person was at a hearing. She laughed when she thought Sessions said something outrageous. She was then taken out. I saw a video of her being taken out. At that point, she did speak up, saying she thought what Session was saying was evil. But, you know, there's a long tradition and an excellent tradition here in the United States of being able to speak truth to power in hearings. Code Pink, the organization she belongs to, has kind of made this into an art form. And so, you know, she's convicted of a misdemeanor. We're really going to jail someone for a year for laughter? I mean, I hope we're not coming to that in this country.
Michelle?
She would be jailed for disorderly conduct. I mean, when you go to a congressional hearing, you are required to be respectful in the room. That means not making any outbursts at all. She could have gotten up and left as soon as they asked her to leave, but she chose not to. That was her conscious decision. This is also someone who's been arrested at least 10 times for doing similar things. She ran in front of Condoleezza Rice at one point in time with blood on her hands. I mean, this is someone who is used to going over the top when it comes to these things. So I support this. We need to become a country again that is respectful of other people who disagree with us. You can be outside with all of the signs you want. I have no problems with that at all. But in the middle of a hearing, that is not the place to be laughing whenever you disagree with whatever the speaker said. So I'm happy that they were charged with disorderly conduct.
Doug and Stevens Point is with us. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think you both have a point, but I think that we need to be looking at a middle ground. The idea of having a civil discourse is what I thought our country was founded on, and the continuation of the growth of ideas in the country. So, yes, we do need to be respectful with each other. I think that comes from teaching our kids how to do that. I don't think that we need some government oversight and laws that are slightly vague to tell us how to be. I think that we just need to continue as a society to teach our kids it's okay to be respectful of someone who you disagree with.
We don't need laws. We just need better discourse, Michelle.
Well, I agree with them. We do need to be teaching our children that it's good to talk with people and discuss ideas when you disagree with them. But unfortunately, many children were not taught that by their parents, and I don't believe that our learning institutions have been encouraging that either. We have been perpetuating these darn safe spaces for so many years and pushing for political correctness so that you only heard things that you agreed with, so that you would never shudder at someone who disagreed with your opinion about something, because we've taught our children just to be so darn... the word snowflake is really the word that describes our kids today, which is very sad. So I agree with him that we should be teaching our children this at home, but unfortunately we have too many kids in college today that believe they shouldn't have to hear anything that they disagree with, and so I think the laws, unfortunately, are necessary.
We're going to have a lightning round of some state issues coming up in just a bit on the Week in Review. The state legislature has been busy passing some things here and there, and we'll get our guests to react to what's passed and what's on its way to the governor's desk. But first, we have a couple of minutes here to remind you that this is the spring membership drive, the last day of the spring membership drive, and Kate Archer-Kent joins me now with an update on how we're doing with that dollar for dollar match.
Yes, we still have a dollar for dollar match still in effect. There is still match money on the table. So it's a great time to pledge because current members will double every dollar you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support WPR. Double the impact of your pledge right now. Get in on this match at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This is the Week in Review. It is the hour each week that we set aside to talk about the top issues in state, national, and even international politics. And we invite two guests from different political perspectives so you can hear different views on the top issues of the day. It's an example of the informative and balanced conversations that we have on this show.
Now take a minute to make this hour and many more hours of the Joy Cardine Show possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge. Get it doubled, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, that dollar-for-dollar match is in effect until we reach $6,500. It looks like we have about $1,400 or $1,300 to go. So plenty of room for you to double your impact. Make your pledge now on this last day of the spring membership drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this pledge drive, support the radio you love and do something extra. Ask to plant a tree in our Centennial Forest as your thank you gift when you donate $5 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you to Catherine from Oconomowoc, who says, I feel that this is the only station sharing the news as it is. Also, I could not get through my day without all of the other shows you offer as well. Thank you so much. Thank you, Catherine, for your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
State politics can seem kinda dull, but it does not have to be.
Budget memos, political campaigns.
Even waiting for committees can be kind of fun.
The gang was all there. Like, all the reporters showed up and
I just picture, like, the village people.
Which village person are you, Laurel?
I'm Laurel White.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm John K. Wilson. Join us each week for the WPR Politics Podcast. Find new episodes on iTunes and at WPR.org/politics.
This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Matt Rothschild and Michelle Litchens about the top issues in the news. Assembly Republicans have proposed a new plan to pay for Wisconsin's transportation needs. Under Republican Dale Coinga's proposal, the state sales tax would be applied to gasoline and the state gas tax would be lowered. In addition, there would be less borrowing, the prevailing wage would be eliminated, and federal approval for toll roads would be requested. So apparently this is Dale Coinga's solution to the transportation funding problem. Michelle, what do you think of this his plan?
I think that Dale came up with some really good ideas. We don't want to be borrowing more. We don't want to be, you know, charging more money to the state's credit card that we just have to pay off in the future. So that's a very good idea. I was glad to see that there was an additional fee for electric vehicles. They were going to raise that registration fee to $125 because they're not paying the gas tax like the rest of us to maintain our roads. So I think that's a good idea. I was glad to see they were going to reduce the minimum markup again, so gas stations could be more competitive. Then the consumers are paying less money for gas. And so if we did pay that additional sales tax on the gasoline, we're not going to be as affected in the pocketbook. I think it's a good place to start. I mean, our state really needs to have an honest conversation about how we are going to pay for ongoing transportation costs, because it simply costs more money, and our vehicles are so much more fuel efficient today than they were 10 years ago that our state is not collecting as much in gas tax to maintain those roads as the costs continue to go up. So it's a good place to start. I'm not sure if this is going to pass the Assembly as is and if it's going to pass the Senate. So we will have to see where it goes from there, but it's a good place to start.
Yeah, quick react, Matt.
I don't think it's going to solve our problem. There's not enough money here to fix our roads, which are 49th in the country right now. And Republicans have been running the show here for a while, and one of the basic functions of government is to make sure the roads are okay. And they're terrible right now, as everyone who's listening to this show can testify. I think it's ludicrous that they're increasing fees on hybrids and plug-ins. I mean, if we want to take climate change seriously, why are we punishing the people who are trying to solve the problem at a personal level?
We will, by the way, have a State Representative Dale Coinga on with us on Tuesday morning, and we're working on lining up a Democratic lawmaker or a different reaction to that coming up on Tuesday. We will be talking with our State Capitol Bureau Chief, Sean Johnson, about other state issues on our State Capitol report on Monday. All right. There was a lot of I'm going to call this the lightning round, as we have very little time left. The Assembly gave the nod to four bills to combat homelessness this week, including one to create a new council to coordinate government and private efforts to address the issue. Those bills now go to the Senate. Good first step, Matt, or not enough, or what do you think?
A good first step, yes. I always want more to solve these problems, but it's a good first step.
And Michelle?
I completely agree. This is a great first step. I love that $75,000 that some municipalities would have access to create pilot programs to get people out of homeless shelters and get them trained into a job. So I think we need to focus on this issue. I'm glad to see it was passed in a very bipartisan way, and we hope that this continues to be, or that it's passed in the Senate.
A bill that would relax regulations on high-capacity wells awaits Governor Walker's signature. It would exempt well repairs, replacements, and reconstructions from DNR oversight. Opponents insist the bill would protect problem wells. Supporters say that farmers need water for irrigation and regulatory certainty. Governor Walker has indicated he plans to sign this measure, saying protecting agriculture is a priority. What do you think of this, Matt?
I think this is one of the worst things that's happened to Wisconsin in a long time. I mean, the expression high-capacity wells doesn't even give you a clue as to what those are about. These are wells that, at a minimum, are sucking out 100,000 gallons of water a day from the groundwater. It's why, groups that aren't considered radical, like Trout Unlimited, are opposed to this, because these factory farms that are sucking our groundwater out are destroying our beautiful trout streams. And if you got a cottage up north and you were right on the lakefront, you're no longer on the lakefront because the lake is receded by 100 yards. And there's been $50 million of contributions over the last 6 years to elected officials from the factory farm interests and the business interests to get this done. And I think, that's just awful.
What do you think of it, Michelle?
I think this is a great first step. Okay, these are not people building new wells. This is saying that if you want to repair a well, or if you have a current well that needs replacement, or if you want to transfer the...
Here we go again. Uh-oh.
So, can you hear me now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I submit this is about repairing or replacing or transferring your well from yourself to your children if they want to inherit your farm, that the DNR does not have to review your well. So this is not giving people carte blanche, the opportunity to build new high-capacity wells all over the state. This is just saying if you currently have a well, you can go ahead and replace it, and the DNR does not have to be involved in that. This also gives the DNR an opportunity, because right now these wells are not metered, but to put a meter on some of these wells when they do some of these improvements on their wells. So we will know how much water is being taken out of these wells. So I think this is a really important thing to do for our dairy industry in Wisconsin. People might not want to admit it, but we are a very, our state depends on agriculture. It's one of our highest employers in the state, and so I think this is something that we needed to do for the dairy industry. I'm glad they did it.
Well, I wish that we had more time, but we don't. Thanks very much, Michelle Litchens and Matt Rothschild. And Kate Archer-Kent is here for the final moments of this hour to share some news with you.
Well, we still have some match money left here. We have not reached that $6,500 threshold. You can get your contribution matched right now during this spring membership drive, dollar for dollar. This membership, this dollar for dollar match from current members, your gift of $50 turns into $100, $200. Take advantage right now. Double your support of the WPR programs you love, like the Joy Cardine Show, when you give right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, do it because you appreciate hearing different viewpoints on the top issues of the day, as you do every week during the Week in Review. And do it because this is the last day of the spring membership drive, and you've been meaning to help pay for the programming that you value. And because we have just a smidgen of money left for that dollar-for-dollar match, mm-hmm. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Just 30 seconds. And
there's really nothing like the Joy Cardine Show and many other programs on WPR on the radio. It's special. Your support is vital of what makes this all possible. The single biggest piece of our funding is listener support. So make your pledge right now. Get it doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Such good news. We made the goal and we made the match. So thank you so much for your support. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.